From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for June 4th, 2021. It's also National Donut Day. Well, for me, that's every day. Okay, the Bucks and the Nets start their playoff series this Saturday in Brooklyn, and the Brewers are home this weekend with the Arizona Diamondbacks. A North Carolina woman, intent on playing her favorite lottery, went to the store, bought a lottery ticket for the wrong game, and won $1.4 million. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than have a good memory. We have a public service announcement from the federal government. Don't eat cicadas. Do we really need to be told this? Amazon is making news this week by announcing they will no longer drug test employees for marijuana. I'm expecting my deliveries to be a little bit slower. P.T. Barnum said there's a sucker born every minute. A 67-year-old Italian artist has sold an invisible sculpture. You heard correctly. It's invisible. And it sold for $15,000. Trust me, it's beautiful. And our goofy headline of the week, amphibious baseball pitcher makes his pro debut. Unless he really is a frog. I think they meant ambidextrous. On the podcast today, we have Art Rothschild, Chris Evers, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thank you, Max. A good week overall for the markets. The NASDAQ up 0.5% this week, the S&P 500 up 0.6%, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 0.7%, closing today at 34,757 for the Dow. For the year, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 14.6%, the S&P 500 13.3, and the NASDAQ up still a robust 7.5, despite the fact that it's lagging, broader measures of U.S. stocks. Worth pointing out that oil prices continue to shoot higher. The price of a barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude now at about $69.50, up 4.5% this week. For the year, that's up 43%. And so if you're looking for places for inflation, that certainly is one. As we're coming off of what had been incredible lows for the price of oil across much of the pandemic. And that's a quick look at the week. Art, I think plenty of places we can jump in this week. The big one for me seems to be that, this pandemic recovery continues to gain traction. We continue to move in the right direction here. We continue to have an idea, I think, at least of what's going to happen once we finally get to whatever the other side is going to bring. And so plenty of things that we can talk about there. But, what kinds of things are clients asking you? What kinds of things do you find it important for clients to know right now?
Well, first of all, clients are generally quite happy. They made money last year. They're making money this year. And they're just absolutely thrilled. I've never, quite frankly, seen clients happier. Despite the fact that last year we had a pandemic, and the swiftest decline and if, thankfully the quickest recovery in history. But what struck me lately and more clients are commenting about inflation. And it's not that there is inflation. We talk about this on a regular basis. It's that they're fearful of what might happen because of all this government spending and they're printing money. And so here we are on the verge of this spectacular, literally spectacular economic recovery from the pandemic of our lifetimes, and people are worried about what might lie ahead, but it's not that something bad might lie ahead, it's that it could be too good. And so I'm really struck by that, and as I mentioned to you earlier, and so I don't know what else to say other than what we do works. It works over long periods of time. We stay balanced, we have appropriate positions in different types of stocks. Of course, this year, value stocks doing much better than growth stocks. I'm sure we could explore that further. And so periodically, yes, we adjust portfolios. So we have something that's in play all the time, but there's sure not much to be too concerned about. And the media seems to be making a big deal about inflation being this big bugaboo that people should be scared of. And we're anything but scared about it. We just want to understand it and be ready for whatever might happen.
Yeah, and I wrote in an article for the newsletter last week that the critical piece is not so much inflation itself. And, you know, obviously it matters if you're going out to buy something, but you can change your consumption patterns a little bit. You can delay a purchase if inflation is transient, or you could buy something now if you expect inflation to take off on it down the road. But the more important piece of this for investors is how we choose to respond to it. And when I say we, I speak first and foremost on how investors choose to navigate their portfolio in response to the potential for inflation, but, you know, more broadly, how the Fed, how markets more broadly choose to respond to this. All of those are inputs into what our ultimate expectation is for our portfolios. And so the good news here is that, you know, you talk about balance, and a balanced portfolio is incredibly well equipped to deal with a variety of outcomes, including outcomes in which inflation runs hotter than what we expected. Corporate profits in an environment that's highly inflationary tend to go up pretty significantly. And so that's a good thing for stockholders. It's a good thing for those individuals that have a portion of their portfolio in stocks. And ultimately, it helps you keep up with inflation. And so if you're a retiree thinking, well, I'm not going to be making any more money, so I don't get to benefit from wage increases as inflation goes up. Yeah, you may not see it on the wage side, but hopefully you can see it on the price of stocks that you've decided to keep in your portfolio as a buffer against those kinds of stresses. And so, I'm encouraged, I think, by the fact that for the first time this week, I started seeing people refer to the potential for a Goldilocks economy. For a long time, we were running too cold. I think the fear had been that things were going to be running too hot for a while. And I think there is the potential now that we can split the difference for a while. And certainly in certain areas, things can be too hot and too cold. But on a broad base, there is this potential for us to settle into something that, I think is pretty encouraging for the economy. You know, Chris, as we look at kind of the road ahead, as we look at how different this recovery looks than any of a number of recent recessions that we've faced, the Great Recession being a great example, I think that the thing that stands out to me is just how swiftly things have come back. A lot of that, I think, has to do with the fact that this wasn't a financial crisis. This wasn't a crisis of confidence. This was, in many ways, and as the Wall Street Journal refers to it, it was a natural disaster. And so when you get past the immediate impact of that natural disaster, I think, the questions that remain are how strong are businesses, how strong are consumers? And I think we've learned that they might be a little bit stronger than what we thought, and certainly what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I think if you even were to take into consideration where unemployment rate went for a long period of time and how high that bounced, you would have thought that individual balance sheets and business balance sheets would have been in much, much worse position. So I think it's important not to understate the value of the fiscal response and how massive it was this time around. And, we've talked on the show about that in the past as well. But the really interesting thing, and, very much how you said it, it was a natural disaster. This is an exogenous force that kind of shut the economy down for a short period of time. It was very clear, when essentially we got to the point where businesses began feeling comfortable to hire again. So it allowed businesses in broad swaths to feel comfortable bringing people back, especially if you're in, hospitality or retail, where, once we got past, some of the worst parts of the pandemic, there was businesses hiring people back all in big flows. First, past recoveries, as Joel made a point of the other week, it's very difficult to tell when the recession's over. And you never really want to be the first one starting to bring people back, and you do it too early, and now your expenses are too high for a slow economy. But it was very clear when things started to get better quickly. And it's just such a unique situation.
Joel, we talk about the employment picture. We got more data this week on the economic front. Most importantly, I think the one that stands out to people is the unemployment rate. Certainly there's a lot more and a lot more relevant data behind that. But just from a surface level, seeing that unemployment rate back to the long-term average was pretty encouraging. I think it's a bit deceiving. And certainly it got me today when I was preparing for the show to go, if you go back to the data since 1948 on the unemployment rate, we've averaged about 5.8% over that extended period of time. And so you go, okay, we're back to 5.8%. Things must be good, but you've got to also remember how low unemployment was before all this began. And so when you take the next step beyond purely where the unemployment rate is relative to history and still put it in the context of jobs lost, still put it in the context of jobs that haven't yet been recovered, I think there's more to the story there.
Yeah, Kyle, I agree with all that. And as you said to start, when you were first talking with Art, is that, we're headed in the right direction and things seem to be going good. It's interesting with the unemployment numbers because, we look very closely and longingly every month for this labor report. And I read a report that the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco put out this week, looking at unemployment and saying basically that 5.8% unemployment rate probably isn't really reflecting how bad the labor market is right now. So again, as you said, we should be careful what we're looking at. There are some estimates that the Labor Department itself says that 5.8 could be 6.1% because they've misclassified some people as working who really should have been classified as unemployed. There's also 3.5 million people who dropped out of the labor force since the pandemic, since February of 2020. 3.5 million people. And this Federal Reserve study said if you add them into the equation, the unemployment rate could be like around 8% right now. So it's quibbling a little bit, but it makes the point that, we shouldn't feel as good about the labor market maybe quite yet as the numbers might suggest. That said, we're headed in the right direction. It's looking good, and besides all of the articles on inflation that we're seeing a lot of stories about employers saying that there's a lack of workers, that they can't hire the people that they need. And that's going to contribute to inflation, right? I mean, if companies are having to pay bonuses or having to raise wages to recruit the workers, to keep the workers that they need, that's going to play into the whole, fear of inflation that we're talking about.
And Joel, most of the service industry, at least if you believe what you read in the papers, most of the service industry CEOs have come out and said that they intend to pass those costs along to consumers, either in the form of higher prices or some kind of reduced good or service that they're providing for that same cost. And so, I think there clearly are some areas where that inflation fear is, I think, more prominent, more obvious, will be realized by consumers. And I think as you look at especially, the restaurant business, as you look at even the grocery store, you can see some of those things, obviously. But as you look more broadly at some of the other economic data this week, I think it paints a picture of an economy that continues to find footing, but which is still not quite there yet. Anything in particular stand out to you?
I'm mostly looking at the labor stuff, but we also had numbers on the from the Institute for Supply Management, both their service index and the manufacturing index. Again, this Federal Reserve report pointed out that manufacturing wasn't as hurt by this recession. So what we're seeing from the ISM manufacturing index isn't as important as it might have been in past recessions. But they're both saying that their industries are growing, that everybody's going great guns, but they have bottlenecks. They've got some pricing issues and they've got, problems hiring and keeping the people that they want to keep working. And that can be a good thing, right? I mean, to the degree that employers are paying their workers more, making their jobs more generous, to the degree that they're figuring out how to make their workers more productive, That's important. And we had numbers this week on productivity. That is kind of messy right now just because of, you know, all the things that the economy has been going through in the last year. But that's an important thing to look at, because as companies are more productive, that's something that affects their bottom line. They can share that with their workers more, and they can share that with shareholders.
You know, I think what strikes me about that last conversation, or that last talking point that you have, is that this is what we've been talking about from the very beginning of the pandemic. This idea that the very act of going through something like this would force us to be more productive. It would force us to find new ways to solve problems. There's an economic concept called creative destruction, where the least productive businesses get phased out in favor of businesses that can do something more efficiently, cheaper, whatever it is. And that's kind of the idea of capitalism, right? Is that money goes to those things which, you know, money finds its way to its highest purpose. It goes to those things which can do things faster, better, cheaper. And of course, I think that's what we're seeing as we continue to make our way through this pandemic. You know, you get beyond strictly employment and look at the fact that, you know, we saw record numbers of applications back last fall for new employer identification numbers for small businesses. We saw a record for startups raising money in the first quarter of this year. And I think it really paints a picture of small and even some medium-sized businesses that are, if not a little worse for wear right now and still trying to get through this, in some pretty good positions to capture business as we come out of this recession, to capture business as individuals feel more comfortable going out and spending. And I think, you know, at this point in time, what didn't exist 15 or 20 years ago in terms of infrastructure, in terms of the ability to automate processes, at this point in time, you've got all of these businesses that can look to, you know, a firm that can build a website for them and produce a storefront online. You don't need a brick and mortar store anymore to be a small mom and pop business. You can run it out of your house now. And so I think the game has changed for a lot of these small players. You know, Art, you mentioned the value versus growth conversation a little earlier. And I think this is the other half of that conversation is, you know, as we talk about inflation, what the impact is for rates, that's going to hurt growth stocks a little bit as rates come up. But remember that there's a reason we hold growth stocks, and it's because they tend to participate a little more in the kinds of things that I was just talking about. And that is, you know, again, that, you know, they tend to be a little bit more adaptive. They tend to be a little bit higher profit businesses. And so as we look at the opportunities ahead, you know, certainly we've talked about value as an opportunity, but my guess is you're telling clients it isn't about one or the other.
But it's not. And I do want to come back to that article that you wrote, because you summed it up very well in that article. As prices go up, these cyclical companies can raise their prices and hence make more money. So that's the argument for value, which is very much in play right now. But thank God for the growth companies that led the rally early on last year. Thank God for the fact that they provide the tools so we can be more flexible as an economy. And I think when the chapters are written about us getting through the great pandemic, which was just like a bomb falling, you know, on the global economy, how well we responded is because of the technological advances that you just noted. But yes, I think it's also important for investors to pay attention to, and this is, you know, ask us questions as we're going through this. Do I have the right stuff for what is going on, for what's happening with inflation? And we will tweak portfolios. The last time this happened was 20 years ago. Growth stocks dominated in the late 90s. And then all of a sudden, we had the tech wreck. And then growth stocks fell. And then for a number of years, value stocks did much better than growth stocks. So what's happening now, this could be the beginning of this trend that continues for growth stocks. But we're never going to move everything from one place to another. But it is important to pay attention and to make adjustments periodically. So definitely telling investors, yes, stay invested, stay balanced, stay well diversified. And with respect to bonds, we're always watching the duration of bonds in portfolios, and don't go reaching for those junk bonds in higher yields, which you know are fraught with peril, you know, if things go the other way.
You know, I think what's interesting is when you consider the tech bubble of the late 90s into early 2000, and then you consider the rally that we had in tech stocks recently, they were very different causes. One was founded on the idea that these things could go to the moon. The other was founded on the idea that many of these businesses were far more valuable than what the market actually saw. And so as you look at, you know, the rally that we saw in growth stocks, I think far more based in fundamentals this last time around than it was, you know, back in the late 90s. And the saving grace, I think, for investors this time is going to be that unlike our joke of a company, pets.com, that we always throw out when we talk about the tech bubble, I think the vast majority of companies that that we're talking about that made a lot of money, growth businesses that we're talking about that made a lot of money, are still going to be here 10 or 15 years from now. And so do want to distinguish between those facts. It doesn't, however, change the reality that, you know, I think there is a better opportunity for value stocks than what we've seen in a couple of decades. And we've already started to see that take shape. You know, Chris, I think the big thing that we've been paying attention to since the start of the year is the rally in the 10-year Treasury. What's incredible is that if you go back 3 months now, we haven't seen all that much movement in the yield on the 10-year Treasury. You had the Fed come out this week and talk about how they were going to sell off some of their bond purchases that they'd made. You have all kinds of noise on inflation. And yet, you know, the thing that most people should be allowing to go higher in interest rates really hasn't moved all that much when you consider, you know, how far we've come. And so, you know, I think the concern for investors is I got to get out of my bonds because interest rates are going to take off. The reality may be that some of the rally we already saw is reflective of what we thought was going to happen with rates.
Yeah, to your point, I mean, the 10-year Treasury 2 to 3 months ago got up to the 1.5, 1.6% range on the 10-year Treasury. And we talked at that time that, you know, getting back to that 1.5, 1.6 range was more or less getting back to normal. And that's what the 10-year Treasury traded at for quite an extended period of time, kind of between 1.6 and 2.5. So there was a normalization of rates. You know, that's very different than rates jumping up really high and that being a big, you know, downward pressure on your bond portfolio. That was just more of a matter of normalization. And I thought it was good to see the Fed's announcement that they were going to start selling off some of their corporate bond portfolio that they had done when there was some lack of liquidity within that market. And that, frankly, the market took that news as a rather minor event, that there wasn't much of a concern that that was a change that they were making. You know, and to tie your point from before together, you know, about all the new entrepreneurs over the last few years, you know, to tie that with inflation, you know, that's a story over the last decade that's actually been a powerful tool of keeping inflation down. New entrepreneurs that are able to compete with entrenched businesses, because other businesses have made those barriers of entry to start a new business go away, allows them to compete away margin. You know, so instead of there being just, you know, one company that can make, you know, body wash and distribute it through a Target, I mean, you got people that can open a storefront on Shopify or Amazon. They'll handle their fulfillment for them. They can advertise directly through those tools as well. And it allows, you know, quality products to get out much cheaper and allows more competition to the space. That's a powerful tool over the last decade for keeping inflation in check. And that story is very much still alive. And, you know, all the things that are clear forces of potential inflation down the road, you know, they're out there. But there also are these other major draws that are pushing down on inflation as well. And that is the natural competition as some of these barriers to entry in a lot of businesses have been wiped away.
Yeah, and I think you look at those sellers, they would have typically been at farmers markets, or they would have typically had a small storefront or purchase space in, you know, a local storefront somewhere else. And, you know, as you say, you can go direct to consumer now. You don't need the middle, you know, the middleman. You don't need the extra space. And so I think not only are we seeing it with the mom and pops, you're seeing even the largest players start to realize that they can reduce costs, that they can streamline supply chains. That we've seen recently has been a bit of a problem when you've streamlined supply chains and you can't get access to chips, for example, microprocessors. But you know, certainly, I think in a longer term view, you know, it's a great way to keep costs down. It's a great way to help keep inflation in check for your particular product. And when you see those kinds of things economy wide, as we've seen in our country for the better part of 20 or 30 years now, certainly since the revolution of the personal computer, but you know, even more so recently, you know, it's just been this driving force to keep inflation at a level that I think is far more tolerable for most of us. Well, we enjoy doing the program for you. We will talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.